You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flak from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with you under 16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Oslo.
Hi everyone, and you're very welcome back to Series 3, Episode 13 of Cawley's Call. As always, we're delighted to have you, and we're keeping the whole guest thing rolling because we promised you plenty of guests, the best of guests, and we're living up to those expectations so far, I would say, because the guests the last few weeks have been great. And what a time to get the Sligo Rovers chairman into studio, coming off the back of a hectic weekend. Obviously, there was a lot of, well, I wouldn't say turmoil, but of course, Liam Buckley departing. And then obviously there was a game last night and John Russell stepping in and a brilliant performance and a brilliant result. Young Shamie Keogh getting a late winner for Sligo Rovers as well. So it's been a hectic 4 or 5 days really for our chairman and our guest, Tommy Higgins, that's here with us today. But Tommy, it's good to see you.
Thank you, Alan.
Yeah, it's great Stewie. To have you. And Stewie, of course.
Of course.
Stewie's
Thanks,
always
Alan,
here,
I'm always here under the table.
So Tommy, yeah, let us, I suppose, before we get into the nuts and bolts of the whole, your role, Sligo Rovers plans, all those kind of things. As I said, it's been a hectic 4 or 5 days. I was in Dalymount Friday night. Disappointing result, disappointing performance. And then the news breaks over the weekend that Liam Buckley is no longer the manager.
Yeah, well, look, at we. I was booked for this before.
Yeah,
this happened,
yeah.
But I said I didn't wiggle out of it. So I said we go ahead and do the.
And we appreciate that. Yeah, that's the truth.
Look at it's football. It happens all over the world. The results weren't good. Look, at we couldn't say enough good about Liam for his time in Sligo. He was absolutely wonderful. Mm. The board met and we decided that, look, we had to make a change and that was it. We related that to Liam. And that's the way it is. Look, at this happens every club from Real Madrid down to Sligo Rovers and it's no different. So we
just
have to move forward.
One thing we do, I suppose, on the show with different guests and all the different roles they have, whether it's a player, manager, thankfully a chair. I think you're the first chairman that we've had on, which is...
We've lowered the tone
cool chairman.
Something
that,
in itself. Yeah, pretty. Describe how Tommy looks.
I think a rock star. Rock star chairman.
Shades on and all.
Good man, Tommy.
You look great, Tommy. You look great.
Leave them shades on.
You're even better dressed than me, Tommy, today. You look great. But I suppose, and we look to give a different, I suppose, angle to people's roles that the fans and supporters don't see as such. They're obviously going to the games on a Friday night. But just how does it come about that, I suppose, you mentioned results and they weren't good, fair enough, the last few weeks for Liam. The last 11 games, I think they'd only won 2. The last 5, they'd lost 3 and drawn 2. I was at the games, you mentioned performances. But how does your, not just you, but how does yourself and the board come about to that decision? Because people will speculate outside when a manager is maybe not getting the results, or is he under pressure? Are them kind of conversations going on amongst yourselves?
And not really, okay. Look at Alan. I'm not going to go too deep in because our experience with Liam overall was absolutely magnificent. And we went through 4 or 5 years of turmoil there. Dice with relegation. I remember there's one very last game of the season. I think it was Drogheda. If a result went against us and a result down in Galway went against us, we had been relegated in injury time. Mm. You know, so, and then he came in, steadied the ship, got us to Europe twice. You know, and he's left us in a much better position for moving forward now. And I can't say enough good about a lovely gentleman. And he did an awful lot of good for Sligo Rovers. And that's all I can say on that. So look at it. It's just one of those things that had to be done at the time. And Liam, he'll always be welcome with us. Wonderful experience. And the fans realise that. Yeah. And that's the most important thing.
Yeah. And even like we judge a lot by Twitter and the social media reaction nowadays. And it was nothing but gratitude for
nothing,
Liam from
no,
the supporters
no,
and the
no.
fans. I've been critical of maybe recruitment, the performances at times throughout his reign, but I have to say, in terms of Liam himself and how he's carried himself throughout the years,
you'd be more than critical, Alan.
Have I?
You have indeed, yeah.
Has
yeah.
he, Tommy?
I'm giving a little nap of the ruckles here.
Give him a smack okay. there, hit him.
Okay.
I hit him all the time.
Have I, yeah?
Yeah, no, I think you've gone over the precipice a bit in odd time, yeah. But that's fair. Look, I can understand criticism. So I think you were... I'll be giving you a little headbutt every night. And don't dare edit this out of
no,
the
he
podcast.
Won't. He won't.
No, that's... I'll take all that
So we
board.
Leave that now, Anna, no, and move on.
But you know as well, Tommy, that... I'm a Sligo man.
Yeah.
So it's coming, maybe if there was criticism.
Are you from Sligo?
It's coming from the heart because I want to see the team doing well. I want to see the club doing well. Because I think there's huge potential in the club. And you've been involved now, is it the past two years?
Just gone 3 years since two years last February.
Yeah,
so
and I'm
in my third year, yeah.
Yeah, and obviously you're somebody who's obviously been very successful throughout your life as well, and you see the huge potential that's available maybe in the Shorgrounds. We know from coming from Sligo, it's the heartbeat of the community. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves the place. When they're doing well, the Shorgrounds is bouncing. You want to see that, especially I think coming off the back of a lot of the hype around the Dublin clubs and attendance has been up this year. You want to see Sligo Rovers involved in all that. Yeah. So anytime I might have been critical, it's because I think they should be up there challenging for Europe.
You're in reverse gear now, Alan.
Have I?
Yeah. He's trying to weaken out of it.
Just keep digging.
No,
that
I'm
hole,
not. No, I stand over everything I said.
It's not a great stand.
Okay, so
do you want a loan of my shovel, do you?
Okay.
You dig yourself out of that hole.
Yeah,
you're
I think
into.
He has enough.
Okay, so in terms, Tommy,
how did you get involved, Sligo?
Well,
you're there 2 or 3 years.
I've been, as my father, 6 years of age, I've been going to the Shorgrounds since that end of it. You know, so everybody's father brought their kids to the Shorgrounds, and I've been involved in that. Then I was away working for an awful lot of time, and then I was finished with my career with Ticketmaster. And the lads asked me, would I go in as chairman into the club there? So I was delighted to do that, because you were a fan, and it was an honour to do it. And I'm enjoying it immensely, you know, absolutely. So it's wonderful.
Are you? You're loving it, aren't you?
Oh, it's wonderful, yeah. There's a great bunch of people now attached to that club, and there's wonderful community spirit. And even when things aren't going well, the support is there all the time, you know. So it's a fantastic time to be there, and it's a wonderful time for somebody new to come in and take over the reins of the club.
Okay, you mentioned somebody new. You had a game last night.
Yes.
John Russell stepped into the breach.
Yeah, John is in as interim manager, for the moment, which is standard there. That somebody goes in there and runs it. But he did a wonderful job last night. Yeah, there's a wonderful atmosphere in it.
Yeah, they played great. And you often get a bounce from, obviously, and stuff like that. But in terms of, I suppose, looking at people, you'll be inundated with applicants.
The applications close tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, and then we review the officers, and then we bring it to our management committee. Then, and we look at it, and we'll see what happens there. Yeah.
And one thing, like again, the rumor mill is in full flow, obviously, in social media and stuff. But one thing we know, again, coming from Sligo, we've had managers from the UK. Are you keeping a wide open mind? Is it anyone is available for this?
At this stage, it's too early to say, Alan, because it's only 24 hours. You must remember that. And the applications are flying in at present. My inbox is full of them. We haven't got a chance to look at them yet. And by tomorrow night, I'm expecting an awful lot more. And then we'll have to look and see.
Is Chewy's name in there? Are you leaving me? My name is in there, Tommy. Yeah, come on. Yeah. We'll have another meeting in a few weeks, Tommy. an interview. But just, I suppose, I'm not going to ask you for names, or I wouldn't do
you
that.
You won't get them.
No, I wouldn't. That's totally unfair. But just maybe from a viewpoint of, we see young managers now, the likes of Bradley at Shamrock Rovers, Rory Higgins, Tim Clancy, Stephen O'Donnell. Have you anyone in mind that you'd like in terms of how a manager might look?
I'm a small cog in a big wheel. You know, when the officers all sit down, from my own personal view, when you look, when you're hiring anybody, which I had to do before in my career, that you see, what will this person look like in this environment, and how will they take your team or your business forward? And you have to look at all that. So there's a whole lot of different permutations that you have to look and see. And what would the people present themselves, and will they represent our club? And bearing in mind, it's a community-based club, and you have to take the community on board. It's a different model to other, of course, there's some other community-based clubs.
Do you have to, and this might be a stupid question, do you have to actually publicly advertise this? You don't have to, but we did.
The way it is like that, the word may not...
Yeah, of course.
Yesterday morning I had a call from an agent. The word goes out very quickly.
Would you, and I mean, I don't mean to put you on the spot, would you have a particular brief for a manager in the way you'd like the club to play?
I mean, No, none of that. Wide open.
Wide open, okay.
And
wide
that's open. Not something you'd ever, in fairness to yourself or the board, interfere with anything like that.
The reason I say that, Tommy, and this is to actually compliment you, because Sligo has always been a footballing team, you know, that kind of way, whereas you might get somebody in, and especially in League of Ireland down through the years, and maybe I'm being a bit ageist here, I'm thinking back to my day, but you would get managers that would lump it into the corner, get results, that kind of stuff. But I would never associate anything like that with Sligo. Sligo have always been a very much a footballing team.
I suppose, yeah, you're right, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
And a little wink and a nod there.
Yeah, and going back to Tommy, I suppose, say my criticisms or whatever, going back to that, like, as a board, right, for where Sligo, you mentioned there the model, and maybe you're not competing with the heavily invested clubs like maybe around Dublin, or we see that in Derry now, or whatever the case may be, community based, as you said. But to me, resources are fairly good in the showgrounds. In terms of what you want from a manager in terms of targets at the start of a year, what is a manager expected to achieve with Sligo Rovers?
Well, for us to remain competitive, you want to be. Trying for Europe every year, you know, and then hopefully maybe have a chance at the championship, which we did 10 years ago. But the game has changed so much in the last 10 years.
So you're saying now I'm right. My criticism is right. No, that you should be getting to Europe.
No.
That's the only reason why you asked that question.
Stick him down in the hole again.
No. But that would that is a target.
Alan, you're getting nothing out of me even that end. You're in the little Jack Charles little black room.
Do you want me to interview you in another room?
No, he's okay. But he knows where he's coming from.
We look at the league, obviously, Shamrock Rovers, Derry, and there's a bit of a gap at the moment, and we mentioned the resources they have. I'm not never expected Sligo Rovers to be competing with them. But there is an area with four or five teams, much of a muchness between those teams.
That's what it was like for the last couple of years. If you looked at the teams, look, we were bottom of the league and ended up in Europe at the first year, there 2 years ago. And then last year, we had a fabulous start, then went into a horrible hole, and then finished up very strong and got third in the year. You know, there's a bunch of teams, you're right. There's a bunch of teams there, all competitive. But for us to remain competitive, you know, it's a very difficult, financially, it's very difficult for us. And the fundraising that goes on with Sligo Rovers is just wonderful. Absolutely wonderful to keep us that way, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And the people of Sligo, I've all, like, obviously from knowing plenty of them, they get involved. It's the businesses in town and all. It's absolutely brilliant. But how difficult is that, Tommy, from your point of view, just to keep the show on the road, I suppose, in remaining competitive with the model that you have?
Well, we set a budget at the start of the year. Europe was great last year. That's a good, once you're, you know, that's why we have to remain competitive. And to keep a good budget, you know, we want to be in Europe every year. And that's really what we our aim is for. As I said, we have a wonderful treasurer in David Rowe, who manages our finances. And so important to have somebody good in finance. I know from my own point of view, from history, if you don't have a good treasurer, financial officer, you're done for, you know, to watch all that. And some teams have overspent, and I've seen it down through the years.
We've all been there.
So, but we cannot do it because we have no well to go to. So we have to remain within our budget and look after everything.
One of the concerns, sorry, it just popped up there, because I know a lot of the lads involved with the Bit of Red Trust, and they obviously do great work as well, in terms of trying to fundraise also. But I have seen a bit of concern from their point of view, a couple of the lads that are involved, suggesting that it's so crucial that you may get through around Europe this year, just in terms of the finances going forward for what you're trying to do. Would those concerns be kind of...
Well, you can't be negative, Alan, you know, saying the word negative to you.
I mean, I'm the most positive person ever. Once you're doing what you should be doing.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Look, you'd love to be... We should have done better last season, but we didn't. Look, you cannot dwell on the past. You have to look forward all the time. No point in dwelling on the past except to learn from any mistakes.
No, but in terms of, I suppose, like, as I say...
Financially, Alan, we do... You would, of course.
Yeah.
And it'll be a great boost for us. And it'll be a double boost then if you're able to qualify for Europe. But there's an awful lot to play for yet. The season is only halfway through. And we know from previous seasons, you know, how, you know, two wins can bring you up the table.
Well, look at Shelburne at the moment, four wins on the bounce, and they're up, flying up.
Absolutely.
This is a league where literally, I think that's set the tone for the season. I think we're going to see a lot of teams moving and shaking. You know, there's a group of six teams, I think, they're going to be sort of coming.
But is that a reflection on... kind of, you have the top two now. Derry are obviously going through a bad run themselves at the moment, and the rest of the teams, where they're ordinary enough teams.
Yeah, but look, if you go back 10 years, right, Shamrock Rovers, were they in the second division?
Yeah, yeah.
And look, what, well, you know, things go on cycles, and they've recovered. They've won. And I come to it
a little bit more than 10 years ago. Otherwise, we'd be getting shout with that because they won a double in 2011 and 2012.
Okay. In general, they went through a very difficult period, and they were no man's.
We've spoken about it, Tommy. This is
where they are at present, and the stadium that they have. It's the aspirations where every other club should be looking at.
Yeah, they basically went into examinership in 2003 and had to start again and got everything.
But that's something we would never worry about because, as you say, you have good people looking after the finance and the showgrounds. We'd never put ourselves in that position.
Yes, but no, we can't.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, under the rules of the club. But then again, that curtails your budget if you don't reach the budget. And there's inflation now coming into the game where it's getting more expensive. I think it's good that the standards are raising all the time. Mm. And the league is wonderful at present.
You mentioned it there that you like to look forward, you're a positive person. I presume that's something that held you in good stead in your business career. And I did see you, I'm trying to think back to when I saw you on RTE about a year ago talking about the whole stadium plan, that kind of stuff. And what I'm trying to get at is how hard is it to kind of constantly keep that sort of, you want to push and push and push and be constantly pulled back by red tape or, stakeholders or whatever the case may be?
No, you have to focus on the final and where you're getting for. Yeah. And you cut out all the noise in between. Now, you can come along and moan and complain and do everything. We have decided to move forward positively.
Right.
And we're focused. We have a great bunch of people. We have some subcommittees involved in all this. We've got we launched the plan last summer, June or something like that. And now we're at a stage, we've commissioned the architects. Some of the money that we got from the sale of the players, we're invested in that. So
Johnny Kenny and John Mann played really well last night.
He played fabulously last night, did the whole game.
What did I say about John Mann? He had the best centre half in the league.
He was a great player.
And so, that's a big loss for yourselves this year.
Yeah, but look at, we can't, that's the way things are.
Yeah.
So the focus on that, because we feel that we have to bring additional income into the club to compete with all the other clubs.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, as I said, you can moan and complain. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in any negativity because you have to move forward positive all the time. So our idea is there, and I come to where I think the whole league should be coming to.
Well, let's get into it.
Well, look, tell us before you get into that, Tommy, tell us, because one of the lads even on Twitter asked the fan, the stadium update. Tell us kind of where you're at the moment.
Where we're at the moment is that we've instructed the architects to go ahead and go in for planning, because we have to get public funding from the government and wherever it is, but in order to do that, you have to have planning permission. So the first step is for planning permission. We expect to be going in for that in July.
Okay.
We had the last meeting, one meeting last week for the last draft of it. Now he's just drawing up that. And then we're ready to put in for planning permission. A couple of phases in it.
Hopeful of getting that.
Oh, I think. When we're upgrading something that's already there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I came from the entertainment business. And if you look at the entertainment business, it started out in dance halls. And now we have a world-class entertainment business here in Ireland. And it went step by step. And step by step up, or now where it's a world class.
I'm actually going to come in on that point because I got talking to somebody from a similar background. Larry Bass would have said something very similar. That, I don't know, it was 20 years ago, 30 years ago, there was no industry here for people in the entertainment business. But what they did, through help from government, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tommy, help from government. Incentivization. You suddenly went from having 2,000 full-time employed people in the industry to 4,000 to 8,000 to 16,000, and then you've got an industry, right?
Well, I've been in for 50 years,
right?
And I've seen the steps of it going from the dance halls
from nothing
for 1,000 people to 80,000 people in Croke Park.
Okay,
but it meant people taking risks and having vision to move forward with it. And the sincere belief that you have to have in achieving anything. But it was the promoters that had the balls and the ambition and to hire acts and hopefully it will come good. And yes, there was supports from governments, but it's the venues. You have the likes of Harry Crosby who built the Point.
Right. Yeah.
If you didn't have the Point, you were stuck in the National Stadium at 2,000 people. Then he got it up to 8,000 people. Now, if you look at comparison to the League of Ireland, there's still some stadiums in the country that are they're in the same playing in the same stadiums as they were in the when the dance halls were there 50, 60 years, and they haven't been upgraded.
Well, while you're on that point, Andy, why can't we have concerts in our stadiums? Why can't Sligo?
Which we can barely have football matches at the moment. They're woeful. That's the point he's making. But you're saying if we get a good ground.
There are no shortages of venues for entertainment in the whole country. There's endless... The venues have nothing to do with it. There's enough of venues. Endless venues.
Yeah.
But I think Stuart, Tommy, is saying that if we get to a stage, and you mentioned this to me before, that when you upgrade the showgrounds, the plans that you have for it, that there will come a time in the off-season you could have a concert or whatever.
Possibly, but I don't see it.
But would that not be a big generation, a big revenue earner for you guys, no?
No, you have to look at where the population bases are. Sligo's only 25,000 people. If you would say Bruce Springsteen Company, it's much easier to fill a venue in Dublin or in Cork or Belfast where the population bases are. It's down to the numbers, Stuart.
I've seen this happen, and that's really interesting, the comparison you're making about...
Only the concert, but there are other areas that we want to bring in. Like, you just have to create a good night's entertainment. Like, I looked after... ticketing operations in 10 countries around Europe, and we'd handle out a football club, but there's all the ancillary things that's happening. You know, you want to bring the people in and have a good night out, have good facilities for them, have to come in earlier, stay a bit later, enjoy themselves. You'll create more income in that. You have to have food for them. You have maybe
when I first got involved in this, I remember writing a column about the facilities. The facilities, as we all know, are just not up to scratch. Like, and you can have all the talk you want about there's more of an appetite for League of Ireland football. People are interested now. The attendances are up. I get all that, and I'm for all that, and I've been banging the drum for a long time. But the facilities are just not up to scratch. The grounds are horrendous. So, from your point of view, Tommy, and it's interesting the comparison you make with the whole entertainment industry.
If you just take it and look at that, where that industry has come and where the football... But it's 40 years of neglect.
Here's the question. Can you see, from your experience of what you've seen through the years of obviously getting to the point where you started off in a dance hall and now you have the Point Depot, can you see a stage where you have League of Ireland grounds the way they are now, but we'll have 6 like Tala or 10,000 seater stadiums around the country. I'm with you, but I'm saying, can you see that happening?
Of course.
Is there the appetite from government or whoever you need to get the investment from?
Well, first of all, I think you also have to need the buy-in from the FAI.
Now, and is that there?
Let me tell you where I see the FAI coming from. They went through a horrendous period there. And if anybody who knows, when you have turmoil in a company and you go in there and the people are all, you know, it's just shocking. They don't know whether they have a job or not or wherever they go forward. Now, that is all stabilised and they've got their mojo back. Now, the other thing you looked at then, that no income coming in there for a couple of years with COVID. There's a whole new... time for the FAI, and I think they've done wonderful to get through 2 seasons of COVID, and we never lost one fixture out of it. That was an enormous achievement. And now, but it's what has happened there for the previous 5 years was the difficulty in it. Yeah. And now they've done wonderful, and there's a new board in it, and there's governance, and there's all that, and that takes a little bit time. Now the league is in a good place. I feel that it's on the verge of something. It's like an emerging artist.
I agree.
You know they're going to make it for a long time. But okay, the next thing you just need somebody with the vision to move forward. What I think should be done was a combination of maybe the government, the FAI, FIFA, UEFA, and you go for a fund of 200, 250 million. 50% goes to upgrade the stadiums in the country, and the other 50% goes into the grassroots, because you need to bring the talent forward. Now, if you look at other comparable sports, we say like rugby, world-class athletes, why can't we produce world-class soccer players?
Well, I think we do.
Not enough.
Okay.
And if you look at comparison countries to ours with the same population, we say Norway, 5.5 million, Denmark, 6 million, Finland, 5 million. And look at all those players that are playing across Europe at a very high level. I think we have only 14 players played in the Premier Division this year compared with 35.
The numbers of minutes are way down this year.
No, it's a world game now. Yeah. It's different.
You've lost Sheffield United and West Brom as well.
Yes, but I accept it. But I do believe that you have to provide them and get the kids from 6, 7, 8 upwards and provide facilities.
Yeah.
So I think
Can I put something to that?
Can I finish it off on this, right? Because when I you say, I'm sure that they're all spluttering into their coffee up at Abbottstown, but over a 30-year period, it's a small amount of money. If you're, you know, if you have the vision, and 30 years, all you think back, it's 30 years since Italia 90. It's a, in the greater scheme of things, it's a small amount of time, and it's a small amount of money to invest in the future of sport. Mm. And look what we can bring, and what the all the clubs can bring to the. To the you know, to young people, getting them off the streets and all that sort of stuff that we can do.
Yeah, and all that's great, right? And I would be in agreement with you. And I think the National League's the introduction, and we'll speak to you a little bit about the academy and what's going on in the showgrounds as well. But the counter argument to that, right, Tommy? So you're saying about world class players. We were producing world class players when they were playing with schoolboy clubs, and when the amalgamation came to bridge the marry up the schoolboy clubs and the National League clubs, they made an absolute hames of it, the FAI, and they're still at loggerheads. So you need them all under the one umbrella. Now, I'm for the National Leagues and the underage. I think that's the right approach in terms of if you ever want to get an academy structure like what we see in England, or like to build up maybe an industry in time, you need that, because you have the clubs, the teams feeding into the senior team at National League level. But you still need the schoolboy clubs on board with you, and have yet to marry all that up together. That would be a counter argument to what you're saying there about we need to produce more. We were producing Duff's right.
Yeah, yeah. No, but Alan, hold on a second. But I said that the money has to be also invested in the grassroots, and that bringing, you know, it's not all. It's not, but you have to have the pyramid, and you have to have a national league. Mm. That's really good. We're probably the worst in Europe because of our facilities. And what's going on the pitch is very good, and it's a great credit to the clubs.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I went to Tala a couple of times there recently. Wonderful stadium, looks brilliant. Then a couple of days later, I was looking at it on television, and visually, and it's all about the perception.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, we're all in agreement, Tommy. Yeah. I mean, there's no one's going to disagree with you there. You actually brought up something you mentioned. Figures. So you say, you know, collaboration with government, FAI, the clubs, go to UEFA, 250 million, so much for this. So are they the conversations that are happening?
I would like to see what look, Roy Barrett is a man of high finance. I'm putting Roy on the spot here. But I think they should be thinking in that direction. You have to think big.
But can I come at you from... Okay. I totally agree with you with the FAI. I think they're in a bit of a reactive mode at the moment because of the years of neglect, and it may take them some time to get momentum. I think this could be led by the clubs, because there's intelligent people at the football clubs like yourself, like at Shelbourne, like at other clubs. People have got business background. They want the best for the league here. And it could be led by you guys. Like,
well,
do you not agree?
To a degree. But I mean, the governing body here is the FAI. And I think, you know...
Well, here's one. Add to Stewie's point, because that's a good one, Tom.
Government also have to take a role.
Big time.
Absolutely.
Big time,
but
yeah.
Does this happen, say, for example, so what Stewie's saying there about maybe the clubs leading it, does the FAI ever get you around the table with Drogheda as chairman, with Shelbourne, and you all sit and throw out ideas and
things are getting better. It's not so long ago we were the problem child, which was a horrible thing to paint the clubs.
But we weren't the problem child.
No, he know it, but he said that's how it was.
No, that's what his perception. Now I think, as I said, I think the FAI, they've consolidated. It does take a little bit of time. They're coming out of that like any other business. It takes a couple of years to come out of turmoil. And I said there's some... with the adults in the room now looking after the association. Give them time, etc. These are the things we should be thinking of going forward.
So that's your idea for it, right? So you've thrown out an idea and a figure of 250 million.
Oh, maybe more. I know that they'll say, look, okay, we're 60 million in debt, but over a period of
agreement with you, Tommy.
You can refinance that into a bigger package. Mm. And over a long period like that, 30 years is nothing. And for a country here that has a turnover, we'll say, of 70 billion a year.
But my question to you, right, I'm in agreement what you're saying, because you need those kind of... You spoke a moment about a vision, and the lad that built the point had the balls to
Harry,
go.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you need people like that, and I see you as somebody like that, and you're throwing out something. Listen to me. You're throwing out something, right? Listen, it's my show. You're throwing out something, right? But my question to you on that, Tommy, is... Is Roy Barra not having this conversation with you? Are you not having this conversation with like-minded chairman to bring this whole thing together? Are you just throwing it out here with us or chatting to the lads down after a match in Sligo?
I mean, look, I'm only in this a couple of years, right? And you know, we're after coming out of COVID. This is only our first season. This is only my, we'd say, first season, what we call a proper first season. And it took me a couple of years to see what was going on and see what I was observing. But I had spotted all over Europe. And I have to.
You told me this before.
I did, and I also look at, okay, Gaelic is the number we say is the national sport, but they're producing great players in Denmark and in Norway, etc. And soccer is not the national sport. You know, it's a winter sport in especially up in Norway, and you have football and you have netball and you have all those other sports as well. But we should be thinking, if you're going to do anything, Harry Crosby was a wonderful man. And if you look at what the legacy he's created here for the entertainment industry, yeah. Just because he had the vision to go away and do it, it's going to take something like that.
But they also, those Scandinavian countries also had associations that looked at the domestic game and cared for them.
Yeah, but governments were involved as well. But
yeah, it goes back to the neglect and stuff.
It goes back to leadership, and it has to come from the FAI.
Yeah, I think you're underselling yourself. I think you guys could make a little bit more headway than you think. I really do. I've been in this game a long time, and what really frustrates me is that there's never been a kind of a joined up thinking, you know, whereby the clubs themselves get, because they've always had issues. You know, every club is different. Every club has a different issue. Some club is part time, some are full time, and so on and so forth. And I totally get you're only in a couple of years, but I've never seen. The quality of people at clubs, as I've seen now, they've got really good business people. They know how to lobby government. They know who to talk to, how to talk to them. And, you know, I really think there's an opportunity here whereby maybe if you guys can get together and start the ball rolling, the FAI might have to get their arse in gear and catch up with you guys. But I think if you wait for the FAI, I think there's a skill shortage problem at the FAI that I don't know when can be resolved. And so what I'm saying is I would wish you would walk away from this conversation and go, do you know what, maybe I might start a couple of conversations and get the ball rolling.
Stuart, what I'll say to you, we're pressing on with our plan. Now,
sure, okay,
Hopefully we can bring more people along. Now look at what has happened in the last couple of weeks. We're going to redevelop Daly Mount. That has now gone to wonderful.
Yeah,
but
now
that's a fantastic.
I think so.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So now we've got three stadiums going to be. But there's a big but here. They're getting financed through Dublin City Council. So there's an unfair unbalance here. Now around Europe, municipalities, cities, whatever. They develop stadiums. That's the way it is. Mm. So that's what I'm saying. Governments have to get involved and county councils, etc.
Sure.
To get involved.
And we know Rovers have benefited from
that.
I think they've
done a wonderful deal to get to from where they were, let's say, 10, 15 years ago, to get themselves into a lovely stadium.
But say, Tommy,
and that's what we should be aiming for.
And if you relate that back to, say, your situation and your club at the moment.
Yes.
Stewie speaks about it, and he speaks a lot about it, about lobbying government or whatever, right, and having the people to do that. And I agree everything that he just said a moment ago about the individuals involved, the clubs now, that's the doors we should be banging on and banging the drums, because you have real high quality, credible people now that can go to government for this type of thing. But to relate it back to, say, your situation and your plans for Sligo Rovers and the stadium, and they're well down the track, as you said, are you lobbying the local politicians in the area, in the northwest, or how does that come about?
We're lobbying everybody.
Well, there you go. So you're already doing it.
Well, first of all, two things that you have to produce very good quality business plan, which we have done. Yep. And we've spent quite an amount of money on that. And our next state, it does take time, you know.
Of course.
You look at it, any stadium. You know,
reaction to, say, the lobbying you're doing in that area, it's very positive
zero pushback. Look, you have to see, as a community-based club, you have to look and see what we're doing and what can be done. Mm. The next thing we have to prepare for, what I believe is going to be the explosion in the women's game.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Explosion.
Yeah. I think it's happening as we speak.
It might overtake the men's game.
I believe
it may well do. But it's all good, by the way. It doesn't matter.
But it's a long way to go for that.
But it is a long way, you have to prepare for it. And that means
brilliant
facilities and training. We don't have enough where we have. you know, we have eight teams now trying to, you know, put it together.
How difficult, there's a good point now, how difficult, say, in back in our day or whatever, and the club, and before your time, Tommy, it would have been solely trying to manage a first team and a budget and whatever goes on there. For clubs now, the difficulty of having to manage four underage National League teams, buses to Dublin, wherever the case may be. You have the women's team now, which is a brilliant introduction to the Sligo Rovers team. Steve Feeney looking after things down there and doing very well. Like, there's seven or eight teams now you're having to fund instead of just the one senior team. Like, is that really difficult?
It bloody sure is difficult. Yeah. But look, you're either in it or you're not. Yeah. And you should be embracing everything. And I saw it, especially in the United States, because I was doing some work there as well, how the women's game is just massive. Now, I'm seeing it already. I go to all the women's games and I see all the young people coming. I see families coming. That's going to bring more people into our game. And you look at Gaelic and you look at rugby, where there's so many families involved. Mm. We're too male-orientated in our game. Yeah. So we need to get more and that's why our vision for doing it for the showgrounds, if you create the facilities, I know it's a cliche, if you build it, they
will come. No, it's the truth.
But if you build the facilities and you have a family
I remember covering, I remember years ago, it's the guts of 7 or 8 years ago, we were doing a show on the radio on a Friday evening, but they were doing the show live from the RDS. So instead of going to the studio, I had to go to the RDS, and I've never been to a rugby match, but Leinster were playing. And this has gone back 7 or 8 years ago. And I remember sitting there as we were waiting to go on air and looking around the RDS at the time, and it's even improved now since then. But exactly as you say, Tommy, it was a night out. There was people coming to have a cup of tea, have a cup of coffee, meet up with a friend, have a chat, watch the match. If fellas wanted a pint, there was a lovely little stall over in the corner for
them. Red wine.
Whatever, anything. But like that, there was children's entertainment going on in this corner, but just the environment I felt here, this is what it should be, really. Now, I know football's a different game in terms of the masculine side of going out and roaring and shouting and screaming and all. It's different kind of cultures to maybe the Gaelic and the rugby as well, but that's kind of, is that your vision, Tommy, to have the whole entertainment side?
Absolutely.
Of things?
But if you look at the women's game on Sky there, and the crowds that are attending there, and all the, you know, the families are going to it.
I cover the women's internationals here, and it's unbelievable.
That's why we're doing what we're doing. And I think everybody else will do the same. But the only thing that's holding us back is the finance. But I think it does need that bit, and it needs somebody to drive that through. We can't, our clubs can't do it. Yes, you'd get involved in it. But I think it needs somebody to drive it forward. And I think it's a combination of government and, as I said, FIFA and UEFA and et cetera like that. But it's not, you know, the world is awash with money at present looking for a home. And over a period of years, a small amount of money and the 30 years or whatever it is goes in very quickly.
So why do we have so many buy-to-let developments, student developments been happening for the last 5-10 years? Simple reason is there's an incentive for developers to go and do them. So all the government have to do is incentivize development of our grounds, and then there can be some sort of payback for developers. Everyone wins, the community wins, developer get their bit. Do you know what I mean? That's where I've been coming from. I think they're the kind of questions for government. How can you help us get people in so that they can, you know, redevelop grounds?
That's something good in it for them as well, but we're all with it.
There has to be an incentive for everybody, and that's where government can play a part. We're not asking government to, you know, hey, give us 100 million, because they won't give you 100 million, because, well, I can't give you 100 million. I have to give horse racing 100 million, which you probably do already. Yeah, sorry, apologies. But I have to give, you know, I'm glad you came in there, Tommy, because they do, And so there is an unfairness thing happening there. But because there needs to be massive infrastructural development in the stadiums, that's where I feel government can really play a part. Yeah.
And I say it's small money.
In the overall scheme of things, it is.
Over 30 years.
You just need to think big. You can't be thinking small.
The value to the country and to the communities forever.
Well, Stewie, we did it in our business plan. We went right out through over 10 years, what I can bring to the town, what I can bring for tourism. The other vision that we would have there is that if anybody wants to come, if any team want to travel for the weekend, we wanted to come to the showgrounds, you must provide the facilities for them. Then they'll stay the night, they'll go in the bars, they'll go to the restaurants, etc. And we worked out the benefits that there are for that, from people going to for a sport. It's called sports.
For the economy of sport, of
the local
Sligo.
For the local economy, sports tourism, and a version of it.
On Tommy,
Alan, The people are there, the population is there. Now, if you look at a few years ago, there were 600 people going to Connacht Rugby. Now they're 6,000 and they're building a 12,000-seat stadium. Yeah. Because they created, rugby created the environment and there was investment and vision, etc. And we knew to do now.
I know.
Tommy, on the, you mentioned there that the next step is the planning permission.
Yes.
Have you a time frame then, all going well, if that gets...
Well, we're applying for funding at present, and I'm not going to say too much about this now. Yeah. That's our next stage.
No, but I mean,
so we're pressing
in
forward.
Terms of the ground and development. Have you a time frame on when you're?
Well,
hoping?
First of all, you'd like to have everything done. You do it in stages. We'd like to have everything done by our
2028. You mentioned
2028 is because yeah, okay. That's our 100 years. Right. Rovers in existence. That would be the aim. I want to get it out quicker than that.
But that would be a phenomenal celebration, wouldn't it? 100 years when you think of what Sligo Rovers means to the town, the community. To celebrate, because I think, to be fair, I think, and this is where I've applauded the board and people involved over the last number of years. I was going to the showgrounds when it was a dump, basically, right, over the years, but loved every moment of my childhood going up there. And you think of the progression over the years and the development, even the ground I was in it last Saturday night. All credit to everyone involved. It looks absolutely fantastic.
Well, like, even if you look at that, I think we were doing the numbers there recently. There's nearly over £1 million was spent on that over the last 12 years. Mm. All fundraisers. Mm. You know, no,
yourselves.
No, ourselves, yeah. Not me personally, but I mean the club did. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you planning to put the cage back in for the players to walk out?
You love the cage. I remember it well. We were great, Dasher. They were the best days.
It felt like a gladiator going into the Coliseum.
They were the absolute best days. So I'm speaking there about, Tommy, the plans for the future in terms of hopefully, obviously, the new ground, the new stadium. There was also a lot of talk over the last, it's definitely died down since COVID and stuff, but the whole All-Ireland League thing,
oh, yeah.
It was very much on the table. There was a lot of debate, discussion about it. I remember going to a presentation with Kieran Lucid outlining all the plans, the vision, everything that he had in place for it. In terms of Sligo Rovers as a club, and their involvement, if there ever was an All-Ireland League, or would it be something you would push for or like to see, or where do you kind of see that debate at the moment?
Well, I think every, either a business or a sporting organisation should look and review and see what we have at present. It's very competitive. It's wonderfully competitive at present. Then you have to weigh up on the other side. Is it a little bit boring that they're playing four?
I think
times.
The familiarity of the teams,
you know,
is a bit much.
Does it need a little
minimum four times? It could be six or seven times to get them in the
cups.
Yeah,
yeah, you know. Yeah. So is you have to weigh up that. I say the competitiveness is just staggering. It's wonderful on that end of it. Then you had this was introduced, Kieran. I wasn't at any of the meetings, but naturally we were very interested in what was going on. There was a couple of different models thrown out. Not sure if a full All Ireland League will work. But I like the one of the hybrid, where you'd have both leagues play their own games and qualify for Europe. Then you'd have another competition with maybe the top six or whatever it is, and then maybe get an extra place out of Europe for it, because I'm sure you'd be able to negotiate that, especially with the Conference League and that, which would create
the point
something
being
different.
There's solutions there, and I actually, even the fact that you brought up that top six, I that's what would have come into my head, like, you know, top six from
each,
both come and meet each other, play each other in a kind of a mini Champions League. But the point is there's solutions there if you want to get enough people.
See, it goes back to what you were saying even a few minutes ago about incentivising people's shoe, and the carrot dangling in front of people would have to be a qualification for Europe spot.
You create an extra space.
Because what I mean. Because the problem was, I felt with listening to teams and clubs involved, was the fear of taking away places instead of adding places. So the Northern Ireland are looking at it thinking, if we're Linfield, I'm not going down there to play Shamrock Rovers and lose me European place when we can win it up here. So
no, I think
so what you're saying about
one of the models that was put forward, Alan, is that each league would play their own league, you know, if we say for two rounds or whatever. And the European places on each side are decided over the first two rounds. Now, you could imagine two rounds, the competitiveness for getting to Europe. Mm. Then there was another competition created. I think that would be wonderful for the fans, and they would flock.
Yeah, I like the idea of that,
look at it. What I'm saying in general, any business can't stand still. You have to move forward and you have to start.
Well, there's countries already amalgamating together.
Well, I think Belgium and Holland are doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and that'll be a whacker of a competition.
I think the one thing that comes into my mind there is that the whole history of Ireland when it comes to you know, Northern Ireland and the Republic, there's a global awareness there. You know, people understand. You know, you look at the Good Friday Agreement. The Americans are constantly coming and saying, the Good Friday Agreement stands. You know, nothing is going to happen there. I mean, the Brits are kind of giving out of it. But the point is, there is a huge understanding there, you know, between the dynamics of the island of Ireland. And I don't see any reason why UEFA could not make conditions to cater for that dynamic.
Oh, yeah, it's perfect for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because based on the you know, shared island, all that sort of stuff, and the fact
especially the conversations that are taking place now about United Ireland. Also.
But I don't think a full league will work because you have a lot of part-time teams in Northern Ireland. You have travel, etc. But I think
there's a hybrid.
Are you saying, Tommy? The 12-team league at the moment, is that something you would change?
We've only a 10-team league.
Or to 10, yeah.
It was 12.
Is that something with the familiarity of teams, I don't like it.
Well, for a full season, you know, over 36 games, and then you're playing Monday night. There's too many Monday night games, I think, which affects crowds. That's only, the only reason on that affects crowds. I don't know how many games we've played up
17.
To now,
yeah, and we've crammed in half the season already.
Nine, I think, in the month of April. Yeah. Nine games in the month of April. But it's not that it's broken, but every business or every organisation should look, can we improve this? What can we do something to make it better? And I think it's Scotland that have split them, don't they? They have a top and a bottom. Yeah. And, make it attractive for the punters.
The point is, in Scotland, they've tried things.
Yes.
They've changed, like, you know, I mean, and we brought.
Oh, well, we've tried playing. They've tried 12, 10.
But if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, Alan. And then you just keep trying for the better of the league.
We've never tried 16, 18, I don't think, here.
That'd be difficult. But, well, they've
we've never had 16.
I remember they tried to get Tralee Dynamo. But
I mean, if you add in some of the first division clubs, because the first division is an absolute graveyard in my eyes, and the people involved, sometimes I've huge sympathy for them. I've always felt that, say, you had, at the moment, you have Cork and Galway, who people would argue could be Premier Division clubs, and hopefully they will be next year, because I think they would add plenty. But if you were, say, I often went back to when Finn Harps, I used to have this argument. If you had Shamrock Rovers coming to town, if you were Finn Harps in the first division, or Longford at the moment, knowing that Dundalk, Sligo Rovers, Shamrock Rovers, just once a season, home and away, all of a sudden it's creating revenue for them. At the moment, they're getting that loan to come to them, and Cove Ramblers, and there's no revenue being generated whatsoever in that league, in that division, in my eyes.
But if you
I think you have to bring everybody with you as well.
If you talk to some of the topper clubs, that will never go for
But there you go. So you're like, you can't have it one way for the bigger clubs and forget about them. If you happen to get relegated tomorrow, and the current form that you're in at the moment, you are well on the way to being relegated.
I'm not happy with you, by the way.
I'm only joking.
You can hit him if you want.
But say, for example, Tommy, say for example, and you spoke about Shamrock Rovers only 10, 15 years ago, the doldrums they were in. It could happen. All of a sudden, if you were in the first division, would you be crying about if the top lad says, you know what, let them Sligo Rovers rot away down there. We don't care about them.
No, I agree. Look, it's a difficult one, but I think it should be discussed. That's what I'm saying. Is there a better way for doing what we're doing? And there's no harm in having a squad. And they had those discussions up to COVID, and then it all fell apart, understandably. Also, you have to think that it's only a couple of years since the old FAI regime are there. Now, the new people, hopefully, they've been. Mark Scanlon's doing a wonderful job for the League of Ireland. Wonderful job.
Mark cares,
You know, he does. He's doing a good job. And as I said, getting through that that difficult period of COVID where we lost nothing, financially, they supported us, and with the government, they did a great job.
Right, okay.
Let's move forward.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm not going to say what I was going to say.
Well, do say what you're going
to say. We need people who can get stuff done, not people who care. Like, you know, and I'll try and articulate, you know, people who can, you know, people who have a little bit more of a vision. People who can
dream big,
knock a few walls down. Yeah, we need more of those people.
Well, I can't do that, but we're just doing what we can do within our own confinement, you know, and we're going to do that. And as I said, we don't think negatively.
Okay, you've been great with your time, Tommy, and we really appreciate you coming in off the back of what's been a busy weekend, as we've outlined already. Let's finish on a positive, because the academy set up and the academy structure down home has been working really well. As I say, I grew up as a young boy going to the Showgrounds, playing schoolboy football, whatever. But to have young, underage Sligo Rovers teams is absolutely fantastic. And that's something you care about.
But we need more facilities. We're short of pitches. It's, you know, on that. Conor O'Grady, we brought in as a full-time there last season, doing a great job on that. I have to give an awful lot of credit to the parents. Like, they bring twice
coming
a
from
week,
all over the west
from
of Ireland.
All over the west of Ireland, long journeys, 40, 50 miles, training twice a week. Wonderful. And right. So I see the enthusiasm in the game. And I see the enthusiasm. The women's game has opened my eyes, especially since we got the new, since we got the senior team there and all the buzz that's about the place. Mm. We're getting 400 or 500 people to the matches now. Yeah. Is it there last weekend?
Is there ever something there, like a plan in place that you're saying lads are obviously, it must be tough for them to go to school and to go home and homework and having to drive to Sligo for training. And I know from speaking to Conor that's an issue that maybe you get the lads down in Sligo and do their school. Is there any kind of...
Well, there's already some scholarships that we do with some, you know...
Summerhill and stuff in different places.
And
yeah,
and the new university now, the Atlantic University, which is the old Sligo IT. And we have a relationship with them. They sponsor and they're partners with us on the women's team. Mm. But, you know, the other thing you have to look with us, we're all part-timers, volunteers in the club. You know, we have Colin Feely is our CEO. We have only a small amount of full-time people there at the club. It's not easy keeping all that thing, all those balls up in the air. But what there is unbelievable enthusiasm and work ethic to make this happen.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Tommy, that part-time people involved as well, because I don't think people understand how difficult that is.
Yeah, but we have a good our committee. There's a lot of guys that are, you know, have run businesses, and that they're involved. They know what they're doing. There's good people about the club. So you know, it's that part of it is easier. And when you're explaining things to them, they go along with you, and there's great harmony. You know, there's great harmony in the way we're moving forward.
I'm going to change subject. Can't bring a music guy in without giving us a good music story. Have any good music stories for us?
Who's the worst you ever dealt with?
No, I'm not. No,
ah,
I'm
come
not.
On, come Tommy, on. For Frank's sake.
No,
if they're dead, you can tell them.
There's a great American writer, Hunter S. Thompson. You know, and he was saying the music business is a cruel and shallow money trench. A long plastic hallway where thieves and pimps run free and good men die like dogs. Oh. But there's also a negative side.
There you go. You rattled that off. Well, best concert you've ever been to.
That's like some show you come out with.
What was the best concert?
The best event, Leonard Cohen and Lissadel was brilliant.
I've heard that.
But the best one that I went to was it was in the desert in California, and it was a weekend, and there were six acts. The first night
like a festival kind of a thing.
Yeah, Bob Dylan and the Rolling Stones the first night, McCartney and Lean Young the second night, and The Who and Roger Waters the third night.
So you were fairly sober for that, were you?
I don't drink. That's okay. No, it was a fabulous weekend. Wonderful weekend. And
as festivals go, that's incredible lineup.
Yeah, and they had gourmet chefs and they had all sorts. It was a very high end, but it was just a wonderful.
A once in a lifetime.
It was wonderful experience.
And what about a concert in Ireland? That best concert in Ireland?
I thought Leonard Cohen and Lissadel would be very hard.
I mean, Malahide maybe, or where was that?
It was in Sligo. The one and they had them up in. Look what I don't know. There's a lot. Bob Dylan in Vicar Street, or I went to Paul Simon. You know, when you see a big artist in a small venue.
Yeah,
Paul Simon's amazing.
Bob Dylan play Vicar Street?
He did, and Brian Wilson and Bob Dylan, and a full band. Wow. Paul Simon played full, I was at it,
Paul Simon, legend. Love Paul Simon.
Yeah, God.
Okay, Tommy, so to summarise, you're very happy, things are going well, new manager in place, week, 10 days, who knows?
We'll get that together.
And you're optimistic, certainly, about
very
the new manager,
about
the future.
You have to be, Look, anybody that moans, I never saw anybody looking into their navel to get anything out of it. So you have to move forward and, you know, put your head forward and just keep at it. Foot to the pedal. That's the only way to keep going in this game.
Okay, it's been an absolute pleasure, Tommy. We really appreciate you coming in, as I say. I know it's been a busy few days. And we wish you well in your, I suppose, challenge to find a new manager, and hopefully he does well, and then I'll be ultra positive. Don't worry, Tommy.
And you've got a kick in the nuts out of it as well. So that's the main thing.
No, we wish you well, Stewie. Thanks as always. Thanks to Paul, pleasure. Looking after Benetti Menswear, who sponsor as well. Wouldn't be here without them. So thanks very much, and we'll speak to you again next week. Thanks, folks.
Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.